This is 1A. I'm Todd Zwillick in Washington. The 2020 race is barreling ahead. South Carolina's primaries on Saturday, Super Tuesday, less than a week away. There are 8 2020 presidential Democratic hopefuls remaining, and each of them is angling for a way to stand out fast. But the front runner has come to dominate this race, and his signature policy has come to dominate the national discussion on health care.
Medicare for all.
Medicare for all.
And Medicare for all.
Medicare for all.
A healthcare system that guarantees healthcare to all people in a cost-effective way, which is what Medicare for all is.
That's Bernie Sanders, of course, the Democratic senator from Vermont, the Democratic frontrunner, and probably no policy proposal has marked this election more than Bernie Sanders' Medicare for all. After a strong victory in Nevada, Bernie Sanders' emphasis on this trademark issue appears to have paid off. Democratic candidates agree on expanding health care coverage. They're divided on how to insure everyone, whether to insure everyone, and of course, how to pay for it all. So how are their plans similar? How are they different? And how do they all compare to any plans that might be put forward by their eventual opponent, President Donald Trump? Well, we've been talking to the candidates one by one as part of our own ongoing series, Foresight 2020. And now we're branching out. Foresight 2020, The Issues. It's a series all about where the candidates stand on what really matters most to you, the voter. And today, it's healthcare. More specifically, Medicare for all. Here to help us out, Rachna Pradhan, a correspondent for Kaiser Health News. She covers healthcare all across America. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
Noam Levy is here. He's a national healthcare reporter for the LA Times. Noam, great to see you.
Nice to be here.
And Dan Diamond is here, health reporter for Politico and host of Politico's Pulse Check podcast. Dan, great to see you as well.
Thanks for having me.
Rachna, before we break down each of the candidates' policies, we had a lot to talk about. We'll get to a lot of the details on Medicare for All and what the different candidates say they favor here. Can you talk about how significant healthcare is for voters as we head into this election? What do voters say about the importance of healthcare to them?
So healthcare is definitely the top, if not one of the top issues for voters, regardless of party affiliation. So lowering prescription drug costs, very, very popular among the public. That has been true for years. They've been telling Congress, they've been telling presidential candidates, we need to do something about the rising cost of drugs. Please, basically begging. A few other things also, there's a lot of widespread support. I think that people want to see the candidates flesh out plans on, say they'll resolve. So rising surprise medical bills, dealing with the opioid crisis, protecting protections for pre-existing medical conditions. These are all things that voters really want to see the candidates expand upon as they run for office.
Noam Levy, I used to be a healthcare reporter as a younger man. There was a time when I could have been on your side of the table for this discussion. Healthcare was always one of the top issues. Voters said, I care about healthcare most. They said that in surveys, but there was never any evidence that they actually voted on it, that when they went into the ballot box and pulled the curtain, even though they told a pollster they care about it, whether that's what was driving their vote. It happened in election after election.
And I think to a certain extent that's still the case, because healthcare does mean different things to different people as an issue. Rachna is correct that Democrats and Republicans have identified it as a top concern. But to what extent are voters making their decision to vote for candidate X or candidate Y based on healthcare? Probably not that much. Instead, I think probably the way to look at the healthcare issue in the Democrat-Republican divide is it a proxy for the way that they evaluate President Trump or the Democratic nominee? The one exception, I would say, is Medicare for All, which I think is playing a greater role in Democratic primary voters making a decision. If you like Medicare for All, Sanders is probably your guy.
Now, Medicare for All, let's talk about it. It has important interactions with the way that most of us get our insurance right now, which is through work. I want to say 160, 170 million Americans get their insurance through work. It is the most common way. And we got this call in our voicemail inbox.
Hi, I'm Kiara from Denver. I would gladly take Medicare for All over my employer-sponsored insurance. I currently pay over $10,000 annually when you add up premiums, deductibles and out-of-pocket expenses, and that does not include vision or dental expenses. Whereas Medicare for All would be rolled into our taxes, it would actually offset the costs we're already paying, and then it would also expand to cover dental and vision. I also feel like it's a great way to take care of your entire community and your nation as a whole, which will make us all healthier and happier. And I feel like it's a great way to create more freedom in the workplace where people are less afraid of leaving their job just to keep their benefits. And people would have more choice in the providers they see because they wouldn't have to choose a provider just solely based on who accepts their insurance.
So Dan Diamond, what is Medicare for All? People have heard about Medicare. They probably know what that is. It's the government program for folks over 65 and disabled people. Medicare is extremely popular. What does it mean when we say Medicare for All?
I think it depends which candidate is saying Medicare for All.
What does it mean to Bernie Sanders?
Bernie Sanders would articulate a vision of Medicare for All that's very similar to the vision the caller just shared. A program that is universal, single payer. Every American would be on this plan as opposed to an employer plan. It would cover things beyond traditional Medicare. So it's not, strictly speaking, the Medicare that my grandparents, my parents might know and love. It would also have new power to negotiate with the private sector to lower drug prices by putting government emphasis behind that and cut out the administrative overhead and bureaucracy that helps contribute to costs going up in America. At the same time, that plan is dramatic and expensive and all the things that Republicans are poised to seize on. And many Americans also say they're worried about, too.
So there's give and take with Medicare for All. It would be the big elephant in the room, right? It would have the ability to go to medical providers, hospitals, drug companies and say, we are the only game in town. You're going to drive those prices down. But also, we've heard cost estimates in the trillions because it is a massive government entitlement.
Bernie Sanders himself has referenced $30 trillion over a decade in paying for Medicare for All. His campaign, Sanders himself, have come out with different proposals to defray that cost. But if you actually look at what the Sanders campaign has offered, it hasn't added up to more than about half of that $30 trillion. Some would say that doesn't matter. The U.S. pays for all kinds of things that aren't as positive as Medicare for All. His supporters would point to the Iraq War, and the U.S. didn't necessarily look for the pay-fors before heading off on that misadventure. But I do think that these are the issues that Congress will have to grapple with.
Now, Rachna, other candidates talk about a public option, or some of them talking about not Medicare for All, but maybe more people can buy into Medicare, be part of Medicare even if you're not 65, or does public option mean something else?
Right. So the public option is the approach that is sort of being pursued by the more moderate wing, if you will, of the current Democratic presidential field. So Joe Biden, Pete Buttigieg, Mike Bloomberg, they're all, Amy Klobuchar, are among the candidates that are saying we would set up a government-run insurance option that people could buy into, essentially. But a lot of the existing programs that currently provide health insurance to people, so job-based coverage, as you said, the Medicaid program, Medicare, those would all continue to exist. The public option, the proponents of it want to push that as a way to say, look, we don't want to rip up the whole system. We don't need to start from scratch. Here's a way to build on what we have and not cause as much disruption as Medicare for All would inevitably pursue.
Dan, avoiding disruption is great, but it also means you don't insure as many people.
That's the trade-off that supporters of Bernie Sanders and to some extent Elizabeth Warren say it's not worth it. There needs to be bold action. And I just want to call out, Todd, how fast we have moved on this debate. Rachna and I used to work together at Politico. We worked on a story 4 years ago about Hillary Clinton supporting a public option. And at the time, her campaign was not keen to call attention to that. We have moved to a world where that is now the moderate choice.
And go a couple of years before that, the debate over Obamacare, the Affordable Care Act in Congress, the public option at that time was the high watermark for Barack Obama trying to get it through the Senate. And he couldn't even get that. That's why you have no public option under the ACA right now. Talking about Medicare for All with Rachna Pradhan, correspondent for Kaiser Health News, Noam Levy, national healthcare reporter for the LA Times. Dan Diamond is here for Politico. I'm Todd Zwillick. You're listening to 1A from WAMU and NPR.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Google. From Connecticut to California, from Mississippi to Minnesota, millions of American businesses are using Google tools to grow online. The Grow with Google initiative supports small businesses by providing free digital skills workshops and one-on-one coaching in all 50 states, helping businesses get online, connect with new customers, and work more productively. Learn more at google.com/grow.
Do you talk about the news with your friends, your family, or perfect strangers? Get the facts you need to be up to speed on this busy news cycle so you can share what you know. On the News Roundup, find the podcast in your feed every Friday.
You might know Nick Kroll from his very raunchy animated show on Netflix, Big Mouth.
Are you the puberty fairy?
The puberty fairy? I'm the hormone monster. I'm not a fairy.
Well, now he's starring as a romantic lead in a movie set at the Olympics. Actor and comedian Nick Kroll, next time on It's Been a Minute from NPR.
It's 1A. I'm Todd Zwillick. We're talking about healthcare and the 2020 presidential candidates with Rachna Pradhan, correspondent for Kaiser Health News, Noam Levy, national healthcare reporter for the LA Times, and Dan Diamond, health reporter for Politico. It's all part of our series, Foresight 2020. We got this from Suze, who wrote us on Facebook. Wait, you're telling me that companies that make millions off of suffering every year don't want a better system for folks they're taking money from? What a shocker. That's Suze. And Kokomo Kid tweets this: doesn't Medicare have much lower administrative costs than private insurance? If so, it would seem that money now paid by employers and individuals for private insurance could be better spent on Medicare for all. Dan Diamond, Kokomo Kid gets to a point that you made briefly earlier, which is administrative costs and where the money goes, whether it's to taxes or to premiums, administrative cost or actual care when you go to the doctor or nurse.
Kokomo Kid is making a point that the famous economist Uwe Reinhardt would often make, which is a dollar in wasted spending to one person is a dollar in income to someone else. There are 16 million people who work in healthcare, many in these administrative bureaucratic jobs. Those add costs, but they also provide income to a lot of people. And there is massive resistance from the industry to the listener's point that if Medicare for All arrives and those jobs go away, what happens then? Is there a transition plan? Bernie Sanders has said there will be some support to help these people find new jobs, but it's not clear how that would work or really how much money they might lose. And Rachna has done great reporting on this.
Good.
That is so kind of you to say. I just want to make one point about administrative costs in our healthcare system. It is true that there's a lot of bloated expenditures that are a result of very complicated administrative work that currently exists in our healthcare system. That being said, the way that Medicare for All would be paid for, there is, I want to say, pretty widespread agreement that there is not enough fat to cut from the administrative expenses currently to pay for this massive coverage expansion that would take place if Medicare for All were ever to become law. So I think one of the biggest uncertainties about Medicare for All is, so if you can only squeeze so much out of administration, well, where's the rest of the money going to come from if the taxes that maybe go up aren't enough? So would doctors and hospitals be paid less? Would other parts of the healthcare industry be paid less? And that could have some very real ramifications for the way that people access medical care in this country. And I think that that's important to acknowledge as part of any discussion about, you know, such a radical change to what our current system is.
And the way we pay for medical services and what we pay for is a whole separate hour that we could do. Maybe we should do on 1A, how much we spend on top tier services, fancy equipment, big dollar MRIs. Dan, where does the drive for Medicare for All come from? In other words, people who support Bernie Sanders, and there's a lot of them because he's the front runner so far, people who support Elizabeth Warren, is the drive coming from their own economic situation? Premiums are going up, their kitchen table issues, they can't get ahead? Or is it an issue of societal concern? Bernie Sanders says healthcare is a human right. We should vote for this because far outside of what I pay for my healthcare, everybody should have it because it's just the right thing to do.
Well, I think pick the voter, get a different story, but all of us have had bad experiences with the healthcare system at some point, whether it was waiting to see a doctor, a surprise medical bill that came. Noam did a great series on high deductibles that patients who have health insurance theoretically good at health insurance, but are still ending up with these bills that might have surprised them. And I think that is a key issue, even beyond the uninsured Americans, which have gone down, though the uninsured rate has crept back up under the Trump administration. There are another 50 million Americans who are underinsured. And many of those people with their mediocre health plans say we need something better.
Now, somebody mentioned President Trump, and we better mention President Trump. He's Bernie Sanders or whoever wins the Democratic nomination will not be the only candidate on offer in November. Rachna, help me understand what President Trump has proposed, if anything, on health care.
So as of late, I would say as when we look at the Medicare for All discussion, public option discussion, you know, President Trump is really focused on saying we do not want government to expand its footprint anymore in our healthcare system. He says the Democratic plans are socialist. He uses those kinds of terms to describe them. And really, he's saying that there are ways to bolster the existing system that we have. We don't need any more government involvement than we already do. One of the biggest things that I think we could get to, and Medicare for All and the public option sort of tangentially gets to this, is the rising cost of prescription drugs. So President Trump has said it's a top priority for him. His administration has had, I think it'd be generous to say they've had mixed success in trying to contain costs. But that is a very large priority for them going into the election. And we also do have Democratic candidates who are proposing different ideas for how to contain rising drug costs.
Speaking of the issue of socialism or expanding government health care, let's listen to President Trump in his own words.
I've also made an ironclad pledge to American families. We will always protect patients with pre-existing conditions. And we will always protect your Medicare, and we will always protect your Social Security, always.
Now, there's a lot going on there, Dan. I want to talk about the first part of that statement. We will always protect your pre-existing conditions. The fortunes, the polling of the Affordable Care Act have risen and they have fallen. But one thing that's always been wildly popular is protecting pre-existing conditions. People love it. Rachna, go ahead. Pre-existing conditions and whether they are being defended or not.
Right. Well, so just one thing I want to add really quickly on that is it's important to remember when we say preserving current protections for pre-existing conditions that the Affordable Care Act made possible. It's not just having insurance protections for a chronic condition that you might have. The ACA also includes protections on pricing. So that coverage cannot be wildly unaffordable to you because it covers pre-existing conditions. So I think regardless of which side of the aisle a candidate's on, whether it's the 2020 Democrats or whether it's the president, if you say that you are going to protect pre-existing conditions, the ACA includes those two categories. So it's important for people to understand that the pricing part, I think, gets forgotten somewhat, but it's just as important, if not more.
All right. That's President Trump and what he's proposing or has proposed in the past on healthcare. Let's get back on Medicare for All, the big proposal coming from at least the front runner in the Democratic race. Nancy emails this: I'm in my 80s. I've had Medicare Advantage for quite a few years. There are enough doctors to choose from. Specialists are usually low copay, and in some tiers, drugs are free or reduced. I can't understand why people don't want this. So Noam, is Nancy right? If we had Medicare for All, would the Medicare or the Medicare Advantage that she knows and loves, would that blossom to 350 million Americans and be available to all?
I mean, it's impossible to answer that question. And I don't think Bernie Sanders can answer that question either. But I think what she gets at is the critical appeal of Medicare for All, whether it's Medicare Advantage. And that is hits at an issue which you alluded to earlier, which is how much are patients actually paying themselves for healthcare. And this is something different from the past when healthcare, as you noted earlier, has been a perennial issue and of concern because, as Dan noted, deductibles have increased so dramatically for Americans who have health insurance. The issue, I think, which is driving this discussion right now is that the 150 million Americans who have health insurance increasingly can't afford to go to the doctor because they have a $2,000 or a $5,000 deductible. If you look at what's happened 10, 15 years ago, the average deductible on a job-based health plan was about $300, $400. It's now $1,400. $5,000 and $10,000 deductibles are not unheard of. And so what Medicare is offering, I think, to many seniors, what Medicare Advantage is offering to many seniors, is a protection against these catastrophic medical bills.
Dan, there's this massive dissonance, though, in Americans' minds, I think, when it comes to healthcare. We're told time after time, private healthcare insurance costs are going up. Premiums, out-of-pocket costs are going up. People just have major frustrations with private insurance. They don't like it. And then when a big proposal, a big government proposal or a massive proposal comes along, the snapback is, don't mess with my health care. Don't change it. Don't mess with it. Those two things come from both sides of my head, and I've never been able to figure them out.
Human beings are wired to be comfortable with the status quo and be scared of big change. And I think that's true even with the Affordable Care Act, which has seen its popularity go up after it was under attack by Republicans in the repeal efforts. It's now polling at about 55%. I want to go back, though, to the last question from the listener. Medicare Advantage is a different kind of Medicare run by private insurers, and many seniors have opted in on it because they're used to the private insurance company that maybe they had when they were in the workforce. That would go away under Bernie Sanders' bill. He doesn't want private insurers playing in this space anymore, but it has become a very popular option. 40% of seniors have opted for Medicare Advantage.
We're going to take a quick pause. We have a lot more to talk about. We're going to talk about Joe Biden. We'll talk about Pete Buttigieg. We'll talk about Amy Klobuchar. And we'll talk about something really, really important. If you want Medicare for all, either abruptly or with some kind of transition, how are you going to pay for it all? Whether Bernie Sanders wants to talk about it or not, we better. And we're going to hear on 1A. I'm Todd Zwillick, my guest, Rachna Pradhan of Kaiser Health News, Noam Levy of the LA Times, Dan Diamond of Politico. Stay close. We're talking Medicare for All here on 1A.
This message comes from NPR sponsor Indeed. When it comes to hiring, you need help getting your short list of qualified candidates fast. With Indeed.com, you can post a job in minutes, set up screener questions, then zero in on qualified candidates using an intuitive online dashboard. And when you need to hire fast, accelerate your results with sponsored jobs. New users can try for free at Indeed.com/1A. Terms, conditions, and quality standards apply. Offer valid through March 31st, 2020.
Each of us is the star in the movie of our life. But how much of a role do we play in other people's movies?
It was a really sort of palpable fear that they were going to reject me or worse.
The unseen pressures we place on other people, this week on Hidden Brain from NPR.
Back now to our conversation on healthcare and Medicare for All with Rachna Pradhan, reporter for Kaiser Health News, Noam Levy, national healthcare reporter for the LA Times, and Dan Diamond, healthcare reporter for Politico. Well, I promised before we took a pause that we would also drill down on some of the other candidates. Let's talk about Joe Biden, former vice president, who's hoping to make a big impact this weekend in South Carolina. Here's Biden.
Bernie's been honest. This is going to cost between $30 and $40 trillion over 10 years. The entire federal budget on a yearly basis is less than it will cost on a yearly basis to provide for Medicare for all.
So Joe Biden has a lot to say about the cost of the other guy's plan. Noam Levy, what about Pete Buttigieg? What does he say about healthcare?
Well, I think the centrists in the race, Buttigieg, Klobuchar, Biden, advocate a similar overall strategy.
We should add Bloomberg. I don't know if he said much about it at all, but
Bloomberg has similarly been very skeptical about moving everybody onto Medicare for All. I do think it's important to keep one thing in mind. When you look at the polling around Medicare for All, it's actually not moved all that much in the last few years. The fact of the matter is that Bernie Sanders, because he is the front runner, I think has elevated that issue. And his supporters are very passionate about it. But more broadly, both for Democrats themselves and certainly for the electorate at large, Medicare for All remains a more challenging proposition. And I think that that perspective is important to keep in mind.
Medicare itself, the program that we have now, proves not just wildly popular, but untouchable in American politics. And I wonder if Bernie Sanders and, to an extent, Elizabeth Warren weren't counting on that fabulous branding. People love Medicare. Don't touch my Medicare. Why wouldn't you want more Medicare when they considered how to put this proposal forward to the public?
Of course they did. That's why it's called Medicare for All, even though the plan that Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren have put forward is not exactly Medicare for everybody. It's actually a plan that has many benefits that Medicare itself does not afford its members. For example, it much more robustly protects patients from out-of-pocket costs. Medicare can hit seniors with substantial medical costs, particularly for prescription drugs. The plans that Sanders and Warren are advocating would be considerably more generous.
Now, let's talk about how to pay for this. We've skated around the issue just a little bit. What was the number that Bernie Sanders has acknowledged? Was it $30 trillion?
About $30 trillion.
Over 10 years. That's a big, giant number. Let's start with Bernie Sanders. We can talk about Elizabeth Warren, too. How does he propose, Dan, to help pay this bill?
Some of that effort would be taking administrative costs out of healthcare. The percentage of administrative costs is somewhat up for debate, and how much there is to be taken out of the system ultimately remains unclear. Bernie Sanders would also explore new savings from prescription drugs and new taxes on everyone that he says would be less than the costs that we're currently paying on healthcare. Also, other corporate tax reforms. One challenge, though, is he may be double dipping a bit because he has lots of other plans like the Green New Deal that would also require raising taxes and looking for these savings across the system. It is possible that we could get to a place where Medicare for All maybe is cost neutral or even saves the healthcare system money. But there are a lot of questions about what this transformation would look like, because the U.S. has never done anything quite on this scale, not just expanding coverage, but taking it away from people who have private insurance.
Now, you talk about taxes. Bernie Sanders, I think it's fair to say, says tax the rich, right? I can just say that. He says tax the rich. He says tax the corporations. Here's something he gets hit with, Rachna. Bernie Sanders has not so much acknowledged that taxes may go up for normal middle class, even middle lower income people, if we have to pay for Medicare for All. But he also says, your taxes might go up, but all that other stuff that you hate to pay for, that goes away. What does that mean for people's bottom lines if they're making $60,000 a year or $50,000?
I'm going to go with the mushy answer of it all depends, right? I am sure that the thing about, because our country is so big, because healthcare expenditures vary so widely depending on whether you're healthy, whether you're sick, where you work, it is, both things are conceivable, right? You might have a situation where you would pay more in taxes, and those taxes would be more than what you're paying currently on your healthcare. So maybe you will pay more under Medicare for All. On the reverse side, it's also possible that any tax increase that you see would be outweighed by all this money you would save on not having to pay premiums and deductibles and co-pays for your healthcare expenses. So it's complicated. I think both scenarios are realistic.
And Elizabeth Warren says what? She says 2% tax on the ultra wealthy, right? What else?
Well, she's got a slightly lower price tag, which has come under a good amount of criticism for being unrealistic. I think she said what, 20 trillion over the next decade.
Yeah.
You know, I think the important thing to keep in mind here for most Americans who don't have a government health plan right now is that those people are paying for health care in ways that many of them don't appreciate. So the average cost now for a family health plan, for somebody who has a commercial plan through an employer, is just hit $20,000. Hmm. And that cost is split between what the employer pays and what the patient, the employee pays from their paycheck. Economists will tell you that in reality, families are paying that whole $20,000, right? Employers are just passing that, taking that cost out of the wages that they would otherwise pay for this worker.
So people are paying now, but it's a hidden cost that they may not be aware of.
That's right. It's hidden. And so the appeal of Medicare for All, and I think it's why some of the a number of the economic models that have sort of estimated who would gain and who would lose, who would end up paying more, who would end up paying less, find that most people would end up paying less than they pay right now, but it would look different to them. And of course, a tax in our political system is, you know, about as toxic as nuclear waste. So people don't want to be hit with a tax, even if that tax may be on net less than what they're paying right now for healthcare.
Ben writes this, which is pretty much aligned with Bernie Sanders' argument. Every other advanced democracy in the world has some form of healthcare for all. Why can the United States not use one more of these national systems as an example to build our own? Dan, how do any of these plans that we're talking about, do they propose to go after cost, the cost of healthcare? I don't mean necessarily the price that I pay when I go to the doctor. I mean the cost of this system that used to be 16% of the economy. Now it's 17% of the economy. Now it's 18% of the economy. It's overtaking the economy. Do any of these proposals put any downward pressure on the cost of healthcare to our system?
The cost of healthcare to our system, which is about to pass $4 trillion in the next few months.
Unsustainable.
Well, unsustainable, unless you're in the healthcare industry, and it's been very sustainable and good for you. All of the candidates have proposed ideas that will lower the cost of healthcare. But if doctors and hospitals charge a lot of money for procedures, that gets passed along down to the patients.
So would Medicare for All, despite all the other things we've talked about, would it promote transparency in the system?
It would promote some level of payment change to those organizations. I think the Trump administration would point to its own record on trying to promote healthcare price transparency. That is a bipartisan goal.
And it's been around for quite a while. I want to make sure we touch on something that's important before we go for the hour. Medicare for All aspirations versus the real world. Noam, is there a conceivable universe in all the universes out there where this Congress, a future Congress in the next 2 or 4 years, passes Medicare for All?
No. I covered the Affordable Care Act 10 years ago. I think Rush and Dan were around right for that as well. And the Affordable Care Act, for all of the vitriol that it has inspired, all of the passionate opposition, the accusations that it's the second coming of Karl Marx, was a modest change to our existing healthcare system. Democrats had almost 60 votes in the Senate. They had an overwhelming historic advantage in the House of Representatives, and that thing barely crawled across the finish line.
It was 8% of the insurance market. It was teeny tiny.
It was very small, and it didn't even go after much of the underlying costs.
Let me get everybody in here. Rachna, is there a conceivable universe where Medicare for All actually happens? And if not, what are we talking about?
No, it's a pipe dream to think that Medicare for All would happen in the near term. And so one of the things that I think is important to see, what I'm curious about is as we progress through the campaign, the Medicare for All diehards, Bernie Sanders and others, what would they do if they can't do Medicare for All, which is not realistic politically?
Well, Dan, let's take 2 seconds and talk about the election. Should Bernie Sanders be selling the aspiration, we need to fight for Medicare for All, or should they be tacitly selling, yes, we have an aspiration, but it's not that scary. Don't worry about it. Congress won't pass it, so there's nothing to be afraid of.
Well, I think even in the whispering in the Twitter era, people will still hear. But I want to challenge my friends and colleagues here. I think reporters should learn from 2016. We can't predict the future. I would not say never to Medicare for All. The odds are against, certainly. Democrats will not take back the Senate unless there's some miraculous event or a horrible event. I was talking to the White House yesterday about coronavirus and how that outbreak is seen by some, my colleague Nancy Cook and I reported to Politico, to be a, quote, black swan event that could reshape the economy.
Dan,
if there is a dramatic event and Bernie Sanders rises to win the Oval Office with lots of Democratic support, who knows what could happen?
You have reminded me of an important lesson that I remember 3 times a day. Don't make predictions anymore about politics. Congress, sometimes it's a little easier. Don't make predictions about a presidential election. That's Dan Diamond, health reporter for Politico. Noam Levy was here from the LA Times, and Rachna Pradhan of Kaiser Health News. Thanks to you all. I appreciate it. This conversation was produced by Hector Arzate. To learn more about him and the rest of the team, visit the1a.org. This program comes to you from WAMU, part of American University in Washington. It's distributed by NPR. I'm Todd Zwillick. Thank you so much for listening. This is 1A.